And the case will be taken under advisement. Our next case of the day is number 02-2833, the United States against Dwight Larson. Ms. Salas.
Good morning, Your Honors. Good morning, Mr. Davis, and may it please the Court. Apparently, I have the privilege of presenting the final Booker case for the morning, and that I'm here simply because the Court, when it sentenced Mr. Larson, committed sentencing error. The issue before the Court today is not whether there was an error, it's what we're going to do about it to correct the error. Mr. Larson has argued, and the government agrees, that because the trial court followed the sentencing scheme that was in place prior to Booker, there was error. And Mr. Larson objected to the imposition of guidelines enhancements, specifically enhancements for use of sophisticated means, for his role as an organizer, leader, manager, or supervisor of others, and for obstruction of justice. Over his objections, the enhancements were imposed.
But as far as Booker is concerned, though, we're under plain error, though, aren't we? I mean, a lot of people made the same regular sentencing guidelines objections, and that would preserve that aspect of
exactly.
a complaint
my
about re- the
My reading of the transcripts, and I was not trial counsel, but my reading of the transcripts at sentencing, and I've tried to find something that said Blakely, something that said Sixth Amendment.
Good for you.
I did not find it. I'm willing to stand corrected if someone else does find it. I believe we are under plain error. But if I'm wrong, I'm willing to be happy to be corrected on that.
But I assume that doesn't mean that you... here's the scenario I've been thinking about. I mean, everybody's making Booker plain error arguments and, you know, asking for various kinds of remands. But given the fact that the guidelines continue to be advisory, if there's an error in the application of the guidelines, that would still be a concern for sentencing, would it not?
It
would guide the judge in the wrong way, if you will. If the judge thought, that sophisticated means were used here and it's your position that sophisticated means were not used, the judge is going to take as an advisory starting point something that you would argue is wrong, right?
That's correct. And, in fact,
okay.
if we were going to look even more closely, the judge looked at application notes. And if the guidelines themselves are advisory, the application notes would presumably be even more advisory, fall to even a lower level of guidance.
Well, if the judge wrongly interpreted
correctly.
Interpreted
so
those notes,
there's no doubt that there is error. There's no doubt that there was plain error. The government, in its brief, its supplemental brief regarding Booker, suggests that error did not affect substantial rights, and therefore there's no reason to find that a remand is necessary. I assume the government's going to argue that that was before Palladino came down and that that's not correct. I certainly think that that's not correct, that there was substantial rights affected and that a remand is required. In this case, Mr. Larson was not sentenced to the high end of the guideline range, whether it was the correct range or not. He was not sentenced to the low end of the guideline range, although he was closer to the low than the high. So we don't have a clear case where the judge gave him a statutory minimum or the clear case where the judge gave him a statutory maximum or said, I wish I could do more or wish I could do different under the guidelines. But nevertheless, I don't know that we came to the right place under the guidelines based on, among other things, the standard of evidence or standard of proof that the judge applied. And in our opening brief, our objection was the judge used a preponderance of evidence standard, and that was while Booker was pending. Of course, after the decisions came down, that argument is not as compelling because the guidelines fix was that it can be read as advisory. I'm not sure, however, that a limited remand is sufficient. And in that regard, I have to look at Judge Ripple's dissent in Palladino. And so although I know the law of the circuit is to do a limited remand and find out if Judge McCuskey would do something differently, I'm not prepared today to say that that is necessarily the correct answer because I don't know what's going to come down the pipe in terms of the Seventh Circuit or higher courts reviewing Palladino, and I don't want to waive that objection for a later day. I do want to point out that another objection Mr. Larson did have at trial was the court's denial of a downward adjustment based on acceptance of responsibility. And that's a somewhat interesting situation. Mr. Larson had a change of plea, and at his change of plea hearing, the court specifically found that there was no doubt that today at the plea hearing you are accepting responsibility. The judge made a finding that he had accepted responsibility. That was in advance of sentencing. Subsequent to the plea hearing, Mr. Larson had a proffer interview, and during that proffer interview, according to the agent who took the proffer interview and the government's characterization of the proffer interview and the judge's finding, Mr. Larson had downplayed his role in this conspiracy, and as a result of statements that he made in the proffer interview concerning his assessment of the role and what he did in the course of conspiracy, the government found that Mr. Larson would not be a very useful witness at a trial. Originally, the court had anticipated it might call Mr. Larson to be a trial witness at the trial of the co-conspirator Palmer. And by sentencing, the government represented it didn't feel it could use Mr. Larson as a witness. Well, the fact that the government made a determination that it would be risky or inadvisable to use Mr. Larson as a witness really doesn't go to whether or not Mr. Larson rescinded his acceptance of responsibility. I suppose the government's argument along those lines is, well, because he downplayed his role, because he tried to, I know the government's argument is, he downplayed his role, he pointed fingers at others, and therefore he was going to be less than constructive, but that's their characterization of what Mr. Larson said. Mr. Larson's characterization is somewhat different. His view is, had he not ever run into Mr. Palmer, had he not ever heard of this Aegeus company, he wouldn't have been there, and he wouldn't have helped other people or directed other people towards that. That's not saying that he didn't do the things he did. He just said that he wouldn't have been there had these other situations, these other people, not been there with him, had not introduced him, had not involved him, had not offered him some benefit or perceived benefit. Certainly Mr. Larson's equivocating, I don't even know if equivocating is the right word, but his reluctant, ambivalent statements in a proper interview would be grounds for the government to not make a motion for a downward departure based on assistance to the government, but I don't know that that amounts to what the trial court found, which was that he had rescinded his acceptance of responsibility by casting blame, so to speak, on others. Basically, I think that was a mischaracterization of what happened subsequent to the initial plea when the judge said he had accepted responsibility. And because the judge made disparate findings about acceptance, I don't think the judge should be entitled to the normal deference that the court would get in terms of determining whether or not acceptance has been found. Now, the plea agreement, both parties agreed that as of the date of the plea agreement, Mr. Larson had accepted responsibility. The court found it as well. I just don't think we can go from there to this big leap where the government says, well, he's not going to be helpful to us, so we're going to withdraw our recommendation, our commitment to make a recommendation for acceptance, and then the judge running with it. I do think that we don't have that remand, whether it be limited or full, is required. I don't know that Judge McCuskey would do anything differently on remand, but I can't presume that he won't, and so I don't think there's any real question in that regard. I'm not confident that the Palladino approach will carry the day, although that is the law in the circuit, so I'm certainly not going to challenge the court on that at this point, but I do want to preserve that in case that gets reversed at a later date. If there are no further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Salas. Ms. Salas. We'll hear now from Mr. Davis.
May it please the court, counsel, very briefly, with respect to the acceptance of responsibility, I would point the court to page 307 of the transcript 7902 at the sentencing, where the judge made it clear, the last paragraph, and then, Mr. Larson, what do you say? Quote, well, I just did it for a little bit of amount of money because it's Palmer and Aegis. Close quote. You know what I want to tell you? There's jurors that would string you up for that statement. That's the judge is very clearly not relying just on the interview in finding that Mr. Larson did not accept responsibility, and it was clearly within the court's prerogative to make that determination, and it was not a clearly erroneous determination.
Mr. Davis, I was going to comment, though, that some of the structures, let's say, that got put in place for the acceptance of responsibility adjustment with the PROTECT Act surely are out the window with Booker. I mean, if the judge is taking the guidelines as advisory anyway, what difference does it make if the government makes a motion or supports things?
That may well be the case. That's certainly not something that someone of my level can speak for the government. That's people way above my level would have
to
make that.
Oh, I'm sure there's head-scratching, but the whole system of, I mean, certainly it's interesting to know whether the prosecutor thinks that there's been genuine acceptance of responsibility, or in the 5K1.1 situation, if there really has been conduct satisfying that criterion. I'm sure the courts would want to know, but that there have been many appeals where people have said there should have been a downward adjustment for this reason, and we used to dismiss them rather summarily if the government hadn't made the motion, and I don't think that's going to be so easy.
That may be. That's certainly not the case here. We have the judge giving his own justification for not granting the acceptance, because the defendant was attempting to push blame off and minimize his own role. Mm-hmm. So I think we don't need to answer the question that you're asking to reach the answer that I believe is appropriate here. Mm-hmm. As to the second, there is no plain error. This court in Palladino said, even in cases where there is a broad sentencing range, it may sometimes be possible for an appellate court to be confident that the sentencing judge would have given the sentence he did, even if he had not misunderstood the legal effect of the guidelines. Here at page 308 of the same transcript, you have the judge saying to the defendant, and I want to tell you, you don't know how close I am to giving you the maximum sentence under the law when in the last sentence, at the last minute of this day of your sentencing, you, a skilled professional, a smart man, tried to say, but Judge, it was Palmer and Aegis. They did it to me. The court referenced the findings by the jury in the Palmer case, who were strongly encouraging the judge to basically throw the book at Mr. Larson. On page 309, if the jurors were sitting over there, they'd say, Judge, you're going to sell us down the river. Well, you know what? I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt, because I don't know why the government's giving you the benefit of the doubt, but I should give you the 60-month statutory maximum. Well, the statutory maximum is not 60 months, but that's the guidelines maximum, for trying at the last seconds to palm it off again on Palmer and Aegis, just like you did in April of 2002. You can't palm this off. You did it. Then again, on page 310, pursuant to the Sentencing Reform Act of 1984, it is judgment of this court that the defendant, Dwight D. Larson, is hereby committed to the custody of the Federal Bureau of Prisons for a term of 55 months. Thank the government for that sentence. It's clear that the judge is going to give the exact same sentence on remand. It would give the exact same sentence. The judge was inclined to give a greater sentence, but
so
only gave it...
Why is it clear, then? I mean, why... If we were to do a Palladino remand, don't you think the judge would say, as a matter of fact, now that I'm liberated, I'd rather give a 70-month sentence? You know, or
well, I think the judge would give the exact same sentence that recommended by the government the first time around, which was 55 months. That was the government's recommendation. That was what the judge gave to Larson. There's nothing else I can say. The mm-hmm. record is what it is, and this court's mm-hmm. decisions are what they are. If the court has no further questions, thank you.
Interesting way of putting it.
thank you, Mr. Davis. You have 1 minute left.
Thank you. I'll be quick and brief. One of the things I'll mention is that the judge specifically said in sentencing Mr. Larson that he was not relying on the Palmer jury, because that was raised as a possible concern for purposes of error. And he said, no, this is my sentence, and I'm not relying on what the Palmer jury said or wanted me to do. I'm just telling you, Mr. Larson, that the Palmer jury didn't like you and like the situation. But that wasn't the basis, so I don't think the judge would go back and say, well, the Palmer jury wanted me to do more, not sell them down the river, so I'm going to do more. The second thing is the government's recommendation, which is what the judge went with, was based on a low-end sentence within the guideline range, as determined at that time under that scheme, which was what the plea agreement required. Well, if the judge goes back and finds that the guideline range is not what it should, wasn't done correctly, or is it what it should be, or that he's still bound by the plea agreement in that regard, I would expect the government's not going to come back and not argue low end of guideline range, and the judge may or may not at this point accept that at that point. But I don't think we can go ahead and say the judge would do exactly what he did before and know with certainty that he would do exactly what we did before given those changes in the law. And unless there are any further questions, I'm concluded. Thank you.
Ms. Salas, I believe you were appointed by the court.
I was, Your Honor.
You have the deep thanks of the court for a very fine job on behalf of your client. Thank you. Indeed, our thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. The court has finished the call of the day, and so we will rise until 9:30 tomorrow morning.